Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Raised in the suburbs of Chicago for the first 12 years of his life, Gary Peel relocated to the San Francisco Bay Area. At 19, Gary had his recording debut with Dave Blindness in 1969. He says, after my time in Dave Blindness, I was in a band called Fox with Roy Garcia and Johnny Vernazza, who went on to play in Elvin Bishop's band. We were on shows with Free, Janis Joplin, Quicksilver Messenger Service, Eric Burden, and War, and Mose Allison. Peel's first big break came in 1977 when he joined Sammy Hagar's band, where he toured and recorded for 8 years. Gary met Tom Scholz when Hagar was opening for Boston between 77 and 79. In 1985, Sammy joined Van Halen. However, Peel did not miss a beat. He explains, Tom called me up when he was working on the Third Stage album. He had one more song left to be recorded and asked me if I'd come out to work with him on it. As it turned out, I flew directly from Farm Aid to Boston, so I wasn't out of work for a day. I thought, how lucky could one guy be? Alliance is one of the best melodic hard rock bands you've probably never heard of, even though the band has calibrated together for nearly 30 years and counting. Featuring longtime and current Boston guitarist Gary Peel, member since 1985, who's performed on the band's last four studio albums, and who also did a lengthy stint as Sammy Hagar's guitarist prior to Hagar joining Van Halen. Former Sammy Hagar drummer David Lauser, whose ties with Sammy go back to Hagar's earliest musical days, and who performed with Sammy for years in his solo band and with Sammy's Waburitas. And Alliance led vocalist, bassist, songwriter Robert Berry, who we had on the show, who is also currently the bassist with the Greg Kinn Band from my hometown, the Baltimore, D.C. area, and formerly with the Keith Emerson Carl Palmer Trio 3. During those 30 years, the band has released 5 highly regarded albums, Bond of Union in 1996, Alliance in 97, Missing Piece in 99, Destination Known in 2007, and Road to Heaven in 2008, all of which reveal their amazing musicianship, well-crafted songwriting, and tight ensemble playing. These talents are again on full display with the release of the band's 6th and latest album, the brand new Fire and Grace on Escape Records. Melodic, driving, hard rock, and it's at its finest. This is one great record. Please welcome multi-instrumentalist, singer, and singer for the bands Alliance and Boston, Gary Peel, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Gary.
Hey, hello, Ray. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's wonderful, man. It's great to be working in 2 bands, huh?
Yes, I never got too much time on my hands.
Hey, that'd be a good title for the next Alliance record.
Oh, let's put that together. Let's say too much time on my hands.
Yeah, there you go.
to quote the Sticks guys, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe a different version of it or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Who are some of the artists that, when you're a young guy, inspired you in becoming, playing the guitar and becoming a musician?
You know, everybody, of course, way back, it was the instrumentalists like the Ventures or Duane Eddy.
Right.
I just love the sound of electric guitar. And then, of course, the Beatles went on Ed Sullivan, and, that changed the world for so many guitar players. They said, wow, I want to do that. I want to have a million girls screaming after me, too, you know?
Exactly.
So, I just stayed with it the whole time. Again, it was the sound of the guitar that really drew me to it. It was like, wow, how do they get that tone, and what's going on there? And so it was just fun to play.
Yeah, Boston has always had that unique sound. Which is very, very different than all the other rock bands out there. You fit in perfectly with that band. I'm telling you, you're incredible.
Well, thanks. Tom and I certainly have a love of electronics in common. And again, when I was in Sammy's band opening up for Boston, I'd be the nerdy guy asking Tom, hey, what's that? How do you get that sound? What's this thing over here? What does this do? But he was nice enough to tell me about the stuff he was working on and inventing and all that. And even when I was in Sammy's band, he had me help him demonstrate some of his new products at what's called the NAMM show, the National Association of Music Merchandisers, down in L.A., where they show new products. It's not open to the public, just open to music stores and buyers and all that sort of thing. But I actually went down there and helped him, show some of their new stuff. And then, as my bio says, in 85, when Sammy got the call to join Van Halen, Tom called and said, hey, why don't you come back and play on this one song? And that's all he was offering at the moment, but hey, I'm still here.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. He's really, really intelligent, man. I mean, anybody that graduates from MIT has got to be super intelligent.
MIT grad, of course, that worked at Polaroid. And has 28 patents on different mechanical aspects to the Polavision system that they were working on at the time. So, yeah, he's a bright guy. And then, of course, when they put together those lists of 100 greatest guitar players, he's always on there.
Yep.
He's also on the list of 100 greatest keyboard players, and nobody else in the world that's on both those lists. And then you throw in, 100 greatest rock songs and More Than a Feeling or something else comes up in there. He designed the amplifiers that we still use on stage today. So, he's a really special guy, and I'm just thrilled to be working with him.
That's amazing. Well, I want to talk more about Boston and Sammy and all that, but I want to get to the new album, man. I love it. I really, really like it. And
And part of my quest here, of course, with Alliance was, I love the Boston sound, and again, Tom designed the amplifiers to get that sound.
Right.
But I said, but I want my own sound. I want people to hear, Fire and Grace and say, wow, that sounds like Gary Peel playing in Alliance.
Yeah.
So to that end, I built my own amplifier, but I used tubes instead of solid state to get the sound I was looking for. So on this record, I'm using an amp that I built. And so nobody else in the world has that sound because I only built one of them.
Man, Tom's rubbing off on you, isn't he?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I remember my first amp was Vox, Remember the Vox amps you used to build yourself, back in the day? And of course, the Beatles used Vox.
Sure.
Yeah. Robert Barry, we had him on the show. He's a great guy. We talked about his collaboration with Keith Emerson, and I interviewed Keith way back when. Another great guy. Sadly, we miss him. We miss him a lot, very, very talented guy. Nice, nice man, too.
Yeah.
Robert's got his vocals are awesome, and you guys are an excellent band. I wish you guys, all the luck in the world. Yet it's a shame that more people don't recognize the band,
Well, again, we're so busy with the other band that we're in that we don't have time to talk about it, to promote it. Yep. And sadly, not very many gigs, but I hope this summer we can go out and do some shows because Boston is not touring this summer.
There you go.
So so if the other guys are available, maybe we can go out and do some shows this year.
I hope so. Yeah, and please come to Florida when you do.
Absolutely, yeah. We want to get all over the place.
Well, Fire and Grace, it's got that late 70s, maybe early 80s rock feel to it. I love it. It's got some great tracks on it. I think one of my favorites is Uncertain with a piano opening, kind of kind of a ballad. That's one of my favorites. Can you talk about that song?
Again, that was written by Robert.
Okay.
And, again, he just writes terrific songs.
Yeah.
And one of the things about his lyric writing is he always has a positive message. And
yep.
I think all the songs on this album have that positive message to them, whether he wrote them or Dave or I wrote a couple of them there. And then, of course, the title track, Fire and Grace, the three of us wrote together. And we always want to be in the studio together recording. We don't want to just, you know, email our tracks back and forth across
right.
the country, which you can do these days.
I know.
But we wanted to all be there. And so that's the other reason why it's taken us a long time to make records. But, yeah, when I remember working on that song in particular, that we came in the studio and I had the guitar riff, and Dave had a great drum groove, and Robert said, I got some, you know, lyrics and a melody that might fit with that. And so we hit record and started playing, and 4 minutes later, we had written a four-minute song.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, I think all great songs are written fast like that, you know, and they just kind of come to you, you know.
That's what it seems like, yeah. We had, of course, the movie Rocket Man had just come out talking about Elton John, and
right.
I'd heard that about him, that Bernie would send him lyrics, and he would sit down at the piano, and something would come to him, and he said, if it didn't come within a half an hour, I'd put it aside.
That makes sense. That does make sense. You know, you can overkill a song, you know, and you know, and try to rehearse it to death in the studio, you know, and that never works. It really doesn't.
Yeah. In fact, to that end, again, back in the Sammy Hagar days, Dave and I would be working with Sammy in his studio, and again, Sammy was the songwriter there, but we'd always throw in our ideas and try to make it come to life.
Right.
And Sammy, you know, we had some recording gear there, but he didn't want to try to finish and polish it right then. He said, no, we got the idea. Now let's wait till we get in the studio so it's really fresh for us.
Yeah.
We've got the root of it, but wait till we get in the studio to make it really come alive, because, you know, you hate to do it in such a way that you're tired of it by the time you get to the studio to record it, you know.
I agree. Sometimes it's just better to have fun in the studio and see what happens, you know.
Yeah. Because you never know what's going to go on. Somebody hits a wrong note, but it sounds right. You know? And then somebody plays on that, and it just keeps on going.
Some of the greatest songs, you know, are songs that have mistakes in them.
Sometimes that's the case, yeah.
You know what's another cool song is Raise Your Glass. Very different. I like that. It's a fun track.
Yes, somebody else had mentioned, oh, it sounds like an old sea shanty.
It does.
If you're right, yeah, it does. Towards the end of that, there was a breakdown. I thought, you know, thinking about that, but, you know, how this would have played 100 years ago
in
some, you know, pub or something, that I thought, you know, I'm going to put a mandolin in there because even though it's, you know, this little acoustic instrument, but, you know, you get a gang of guys singing that, and all of a sudden that's rock, you know?
Exactly. Like you said, this song probably could have been popular 100 years ago.
Right. Well, yeah, maybe Robert has channeled that from a past life.
I think you're right. Real Thing is another nice melody, another rocker. We love that track as well. The opening, Don't Stop the Wheel Turning, great song. Really, really, really good song.
Thanks, yeah.
Yeah.
So, as we're working on songs there in the studio, you know, we've known each other so long and been in bands and stuff and worked together that we certainly feel comfortable and trust the other guys. And so, like when Dave Lauza, the drummer, tells me, oh, here, strum the guitar like this or play this as a minor chord instead of a major, I'm not offended. Like, wait, here's the drummer telling me how to play guitar, you know? No. If he's got an idea, I try it because I know it's going to be good. And so, yeah, that's the fun part about working in the studio with those guys.
Now did Robert produce it? Did you have a producer for this, or...?
We sort of all produced it, but
right. Yeah,
we'll certainly give Robert the credit. It's his studio. He knows his way around there. But, as we were doing the initial mixes of it, we were all sitting there. Any one of us would have, you know, deferred to the other guys, too. You know, like, oh, here, bring this up, bring that down. This should, you know, come out. So, yeah, we were certainly all on the same page about that.
Time is another good tune.
Thanks.
Yeah, I really enjoy that as well. It's a great album. I'll give it 5 stars.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, we're proud of it. And again, I really hope that we can play these songs live.
Yes.
And we don't do a whole lot of overdubs in the studio, so
yeah,
we could definitely play that live. Again, I hope we can get our old keyboard player, Alan Fitzgerald, out of retirement to do some gigs with us. And just the four of us could pull it off.
I think these songs were meant to play live, you know? They're going to sound even better live.
I think they've got a certain spontaneity and sound to them that just sounds like a band playing someplace.
Oh, definitely. And some of your other songs and other albums I really like Change from Blood of Union from 96. That was another great song. Your whole repertoire, Road to Heaven. I checked out Road to Heaven. I think you guys were playing that at Sammy's Beach Bar.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a live video of us doing that.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Well, thanks, yeah. Again, I wish we could do more live shows because that's, again, to a band, that's the ultimate statement. And then you get to see what the audience says, too. You know, do they like it? Do they applaud? Do they boo you? You know, what happens?
Well, can you get a tour together this quick, this year, I guess? Or is that too hard?
Yeah, we're talking with folks about doing that. And best place for us to show off the band would be on some festivals where, there's like 10 or 20 bands over a couple of days, where the audience is coming, and they know they're going to see bands they've never seen before, because there's so many, or perhaps never heard of before, but they're open to it, like, hey, we're just here to party and have a good time.
Exactly.
So that would be a great venue for us. I hope we can snag on one of those here.
Yeah, we do a lot of festivals here in Florida, and they're always big, big time, lots of people.
Sure,
St. Pete, Clearwater, and where I am in Sarasota, we've got lots of festivals, so keep us in mind.
Great, yeah, love to go down there and do that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, Boston, I tell you, one song you really shine on is Long Time, because then Tom plays the organ, and you just wail, man, on guitar.
Thank you.
I invite everybody on to check out Long Time on YouTube. With some of the more recent concerts, was it tough to learn the repertoire when you first joined Boston, or was it not that bad?
Well, because I was in the opening act on actually even on the first tour,
right
when I joined Sammy's band, his manager knew Boston's manager, and we got to open up the end of their first tour in '77,
right?
And then they liked us, we liked them, and they said, "Hey, you guys should do the entire second tour." So yeah, we traveled with them 9 months all across the country, so I knew the songs pretty well going into it. But I certainly had to learn all the parts note for note once I got there. But I knew the material.
And the all the studio albums, I mean it's Tom Schultz, doing a lot, most of the work, I guess. But
he plays just about everything.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I saw it.
Like Robert Berry. Robert is an excellent guitar, bassist, keyboard, and drummer,
Todd Rundgren does a lot of that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some guys that just can do anything.
Well, you're kind of a multi-instrumentalist as well, right?
I do get to play keys on stage with Boston, and I actually did a little bit in Sammy's band, too. And in Boston, there's a song where I play harmonica.
Really?
Which is fun to do. It's nice to be able to stretch out and do something a little different, surprise people, think, oh, I didn't know he played that.
Exactly. Well, the Boston studio albums, I noticed you got credit for the first album doing photo editing. Is that true?
The first album, but the reissue of it.
Okay.
So, I didn't take the photos. I just helped, put that together for the package for the reissue of the first album.
Okay, yeah, I noticed that. I said, really? Well, what's that all about?
So in between Boston tours, because sometimes they were, few and far between, that was one of the other jobs I had, was as a graphic designer.
Oh, cool.
And so when Tom was putting together the again, the reissue on that first album. He said, oh, would you help, you know, edit the photos and put this together, blah, blah, blah. So I said, oh, yeah, I'd be glad to. So and yeah, that's why he gave me the credit for that.
Well, that was nice. Some people don't get credit at all.
That's right.
And didn't you play, you were kind of involved in Third Stage in 86. Didn't you play guitar on I Think I Like It?
That's right, yeah. So okay. That was the one song left to be recorded.
Right.
I got there. And again, Tom had just asked me to come and play on that one track.
Right.
And again, because I had I got the word from Sammy that he was leaving. And again, I flew right from our last gig, Farm Aid One in Champaign, Illinois,
yeah,
to Boston. Was working with Tom, and after a few weeks working there, he said, "Gee, I think we work well together. Why don't you move back here? We'll finish this album. We'll go on tour, and we'll see what happens." And yeah, here I am.
So, how does that work then? How do you record an album with Tom, like Life, Love, and Hope? You know, with your guitars and vocals, and how does that work?
As a matter of fact, we did this all analog, like on tape,
okay.
which doesn't happen much anymore, but Tom definitely prefers the sound of tape as opposed to, you know, computer recording.
Right.
And, you know, you can say the benefits of one or the other, you know, but whatever, he definitely wanted this one on analog tape, and that's the way we did it.
Now, were you there with him in the studio at the time, or?
Certainly not all the time,
right.
No. But yeah, sometimes I go to his place and record some stuff, and I have my own tape deck here at my house, and
right.
So I recorded some of the stuff here in my place too. I remember, I Think I Like It from the Third Stage album that, of course, I was going there to record in his studio, and I was a little apprehensive because I mean, Tom is just a perfectionist, you know, and I figured he'd be standing over me like a hawk, you know,
yeah.
Every note I played, and
yeah.
I was getting a little nervous. We said, okay, you're going to come to record this solo here today. I said, okay, you know. But when it came time to record, and he said, look, you know how to run a tape machine, and, you know, here's the record button, you're going to go in on that track. There's, you know, use that foot switch to punch in and out. I'm going to go have a sandwich. You just go ahead and record it. He left the room. Which, he's a smart guy, so he probably knew that I was a little intimidated. He figured, just let the guy go for it, you know. So that made it easy for me to just make some mistakes and keep trying until I got it.
Exactly. That's a good thing he's like that, you know, and he's not the other way. Because I'd be sweating bullets, you know, him over my shoulder like that.
Sure.
I saw the video he did of going back to the house where he recorded all the music, you know, that's funny, you know, his old house, the basement.
Right, I saw that too, yeah, on TV here.
I can't believe he recorded all that music in that little space there. It's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, in his basement, an apartment building in Boston. And, of course, at the time, nobody else had ever done that. You know, you just assumed that you had to go into a professional recording studio to make an album.
Exactly.
So when he, you know, showed these tapes to Columbia or Epic, whatever, that they said, well, you know, you're going to want to re-record this in a real studio, right? And of course, they said, no, that's the sound I want right there. That's it. Done. It's finished, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, they recorded a couple other songs they needed for the record. But yeah, that first stuff. And to me, that started the whole home recording industry.
I think you're right.
Again, up to then, you just didn't do that. So, and of course, that was the biggest selling debut album ever.
Yeah.
And so people thought, well, gee, if he could do that, how about us, you know? And yeah, that really started the home recording thing. And of course, now you can record an album in your living room on your laptop computer.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah. He's definitely a pioneer. Definitely a pioneer. Yep. Was your last tour the Hyperspace tour?
Yes.
That was it, with Joan Jett, right?
Yes, she opened up a whole bunch of shows for us.
Did you get to talk to Joan much?
Yes, and of course, she's very friendly and
yep.
Of course, got great stories of the old days and all that. And she's also a vegetarian like Tom and I are, so
right.
we got along in that regard as well. And her manager is in the band and plays keys, And he's been around for a long time, and so he was great to talk to as well, again, about the old days and songwriting back in what they called the Brill Building in New York City.
Like that's right.
It was Tin Pan Alley, you know, so he has some great stories about that, too.
Yep, the good old days of songwriting.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Carol King and...
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying to get a hold of Joan for a long time for an interview. I did the rest of the Runaways, Lita Ford, a couple. I know Lita and I know Cherie, but you know, me and Joan is from Maryland originally, and she's a big,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's a big Oriole fan, and she did a fantasy camp with the Orioles the year after I did. And so I wanted to talk to her about that, you know, and I just, you know, I mean, I covered a couple of her shows and they put all my reviews on their website and everything, but I just can't get a hold of her. And we're like the same age, you know?
Yeah. She's very friendly. And of course, you know, you never know what somebody's going to be like when you're on tour with them. Either they're going to keep to themselves or they don't want to talk to you or this, that. No, she was very friendly with us, and I'm sure... You know, if you can get a hold of her, she'll be glad to do it.
You know, I've done over 1,000, you know, more than 1,000 interviews, and a lot of them my heroes, and I haven't had one bad one. I haven't had one person just be a total idiot. Everybody's been fantastic, so I've been very, very blessed with that.
I saw your list on this. Like, I'm flattered to be part of that.
Yeah, I've got four more coming up. I got Mitch Ryder coming up, Jeff Skunk Baxter, Bernard Fowler, who's in the Stones. You know, he's a backup singer for the Stones. Talking to him on Sunday, that's going to be cool because they're on tour right now. He's on tour with the Stones, so
right.
Yeah, I'll go get Mick. Let me get Mick on the phone.
Mick, you know, I saw an interview with him on YouTube or something. I don't know how I ran into it.
Right.
He's doing an interview in French.
Really?
I had no idea he was that fluent in any other language. But there he is, you know, just chatting away in French.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. You know, you got a great radio voice, by the way.
Well, thanks. I hope it comes off okay on the radio. But I never thought about being a DJ.
You got to, you know, I'm trained because I was a top 40 DJ back in the late 70s, and I actually went to broadcasting school, was owned by CBS and everything, and I could tell who's got a good voice. You got a great voice. You'd be a great top 40 guy back, especially back in the 70s, you know?
Yeah. I could try for that. The low down FM.
Yeah, there you go.
WFA.
See, there you go.
From Baltimore, Maryland.
There you go.
Yeah.
Underground rock and roll.
Which is kind of like my Clint Eastwood voice. You're feeling lucky?
Yeah, you do sound like Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Punk. See, Gary Peel does impressions as well. Well, who else do you do?
That's about it. Yeah.
So what was it like working with Sammy? Sammy looks like a fun guy.
Exactly. What you see is what you get with Sammy. He was always in a good mood.
Yeah.
And he was our cheerleader from day one, you know, because when I joined, you know, people didn't really know who Sammy Hagar was, you know, especially down south. We'd go down there and, you know, play in Alabama or something, and they'd say, "Oh, yeah, Sammy Hagar. He's one of the Hagar twins from Hee Haw, right?"
Oh, jeez.
We go, no, he was in a band called Montrose.
That's funny.
You know, now he's off on his own. And he would say, "Hey, next year's going to be even better than this year." And it was. You know, every year we had bigger places to play and sold more records. And, you know, it just went up and up each year. And it was great working with him.
Yeah, he did. I remember seeing him do, like, a wife swap thing on TV. That was pretty funny.
But I didn't see that.
Yeah, they swap wives, you know, for a while. Sammy was funny. He was really funny in that. I was fortunate to hang out with Ronnie Montrose in his like last tour.
Oh.
Yeah. Him and his wife, Lisa, and had a great time with him. And you know, that was another sad ending, you know?
Yes, we've lost a few great people along the way.
A few?
Yeah.
I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, right.
Like 12 of the interviews that I've done, I've got a book that's coming out with a lot of these interviews, And 12 of the guys are gone already that I've chatted with, you know. Guys like Jack Bruce and, you know, I mean, it's crazy. You know, it's kind of scary in a way.
Yeah, but, that's life. That's the other side of life.
I know. But I wish they wouldn't go so fast, you know.
Yeah.
You've got a great history because some of the groups you played with, and you actually played at the Fillmore, right?
Yes. Again, that was the band Fox.
Right.
Myself, Roy Garcia, and Johnny V, alias Johnny Vernazza. And, Johnny went on to play with Elvin Bishop's band after that. But we got that gig because Bill Graham, back in the days, had an audition night, you know, where bands would get up and play. And we got it, you know. So we played the weekend, and we opened up for Free, which, of course, had Paul Rogers in it.
Yep.
And a band from Texas called Blood Rock.
Blood Rock. Oh, man, I remember Blood Rock.
Yeah. So we were, again, thrilled to pieces to do that show with those guys. And then, but as a matter of fact, the guys from this other band were in the audience and saw me and wanted to hire me for their band.
Hmm.
And so I said, well, I really like the guys I'm working with. How about just hire all three of us? Because it was just a three-piece band.
Yeah.
And we actually all jammed together. But they said, no, we really just want you. And that turned out to be Mitchell Froom, who was going on to be a terrific producer.
Yeah.
He's done Paul McCartney and Los Lobos, Sheryl Crow, Crowded House, Randy Newman, Elvis Costello, on and on and on, you know. And his brother, both of them played keys. Mitchell played the organ and his brother played piano. And we were always looking for a good singer, you know. At first I was doing the singing, but I'm really not that great a singer. We gotta get somebody else. And for a while, we started doing a few shows with Norman Greenbaum.
Yep.
He was, of course, singer-songwriter.
Yep.
And he had his big hit, Spirit of the Sky, back in 1970. And so when he was trying to make a comeback in the early 70s there, when we met him, and he said, gee, why don't you guys let me do some shows together? You know, I play acoustic guitar, and I'll play my stuff, and you guys play. And so we started doing a few shows like that. And we actually were doing some high school dance concert kind of thing. And so we went on, and again, our name, band was Crossfire, so we went on and did our set, and, great, the kids like it and all that. And then Norman comes on, and he starts playing his stuff, and he's just, like acoustic guitar, and him singing.
Yeah.
And the audience is a little restless, they're like, oh, okay, this is not exactly a rock show. And so our drummer, Steve Jones, just gets up and starts playing along with Norman. And, of course, Norman turns around and goes, what's going on? Because we had left our gear up there because we didn't bother breaking it down until he came up. And so Norman looks over the side of the stage, and we're still standing there. And he calls us all up, and we just started playing with him. And we'd, seen him a few times, so we sort of knew the songs.
Right.
And, of course, we all knew Spirit in the Sky, so there you go. I mean, no rehearsal whatsoever. Just started playing with him. And so we started backing him up for a while. And then we heard that Sammy Hagar, again, had left Montrose.
Mm-hmm.
And we called him and said, hey, we're looking for, a real rock singer here for a band. Would you do it? And he said, well, no, I've got a band and I'm trying to, work them in because we're about to do our first record. And but could I do some gigs with you guys? And so we actually did a couple of shows with him. And our band eventually broke up, and Sammy called me one day, and I tell this story particularly to young musicians, like, well, how'd you get that first break with Sammy?
Right, right.
So he had seen me, he knew who I was, and he called up one day and said, hey, Peel, are you into drugs? And I said, well, no, why? And he said, well, because my last guitar player OD'd by shooting cocaine in the bathroom of a gas station.
Oh, jeez.
I go, oh, man, poor guy. He said, so why don't you come down and jam with us? And I said, yeah, sure. So I go down and the audition, jam, whatever, and Sammy's manager calls up and said, hey, there was a gig with Queen and Thin Lizzy. Queen canceled. Mm-hmm. Thin Lizzy's going to headline. You guys could be the opening act if you have a guitar player. And so, of course, Sammy turns to me and says, hey, can you do the gig? It's in 2 days. And, of course, I said, yeah, sure, yeah.
No problem.
So, yeah, I can do that. So, of course, I went home and practiced all the stuff as best I could and did the show, and actually got a good review from the show, too.
Awesome.
But as I was saying goodbye to the guys, because I figured out they just, you know, hired me just for to fill in or right. whatever, you know. But I was saying goodbye, and the bass player, Bill Church, said, "Oh, no, you're in the band. That's it," you know. I said, "Oh, okay. Nobody really told me, you know."
Yeah, great story.
Yeah, it was 8 years with Sammy, and a lot of fun.
Yeah. Did you open for Janis Joplin?
Yes, in the band Fox.
Right.
That was in Hawaii.
Huh.
We, again, that was Roy and Johnny and me, and we'd been over there for a few months. Our manager, whatever, had some gigs for us over there, and so we went there. And, you know, obviously we were, I thought, pretty good band. And so we were doing clubs and other concerts over there. One of those was we got to open up for Quicksilver Messenger Service.
Yep, great band.
Over there to record one of their albums.
Yeah.
Somehow we got the gig with opening for Janis with the Full Tilt Boogie Band over there. And needless to say, I mean, she was fantastic, you know. And strangely enough, you know, as things happen like that, a little while later, the rest of Big Brother came over, and they were doing their own show as Big Brother.
Huh.
And we opened up that show, too.
Wow.
So, strange world.
You know, Big Brother was underrated, you know? They were a great band, you know? But
yeah.
Yeah, they were overshadowed, you know?
Right, yeah. And I thought, of course, they fit very well with her as that loose, you know, kind of boogie San Francisco, you know,
yep.
no holds barred kind of band, you know.
I got a funny story about Janis Joplin. Mark Farner told me.
Oh.
They were at a festival, and they were on the helicopter, and Mark hung out with Janis. And when Janis was getting off the helicopter, Mick Jagger was getting on the helicopter.
Oh.
And before he got on it, she had a chocolate bar and spread chocolate all over the seat. And Mick Jagger was wearing a white pair of pants.
Oh,
so I guess they had a sense of humor, huh?
Yeah.
I love those kind of stories.
Yeah. And that's probably some of the tame ones that you tell
on
the radio.
Oh, yeah. They won't tell me the good stuff.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to give you some tremendous credit here, and I told Robert the same thing. I am so impressed by you guys, December People. I think that it's a huge breakthrough for Christmas music, and you guys did an excellent, excellent job, man.
Well, thanks so much. That, again, that was Robert's idea of a band doing holiday songs, Christmas songs, but in the styles of your favorite rock bands.
It's fantastic.
And when he first told me about it, I said, "Oh, that sounds kind of fun, yeah." But he said, "But every show we do is going to be a benefit for a local food bank or
right.
something like that." And I said, "Hey, count me in. I'd love to do that at that time of year." And yeah, the audience gets it. It's obviously a family friendly kind of show.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we'll start off a song that sounds like ZZ Top, you know, dun, 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 but we go into, you know, Santa Claus is coming to town.
Exactly.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not. And of course, the audience cracks up and they get it. And every song is like a different band. And so it's really fun to do. And again, benefit for the local charity there. And so it's a lot of fun.
It's incredible. You get Jingle Bells in the style of Van Halen. You got We Three Kings in the style of Kansas.
Yeah.
And you
white,
got...
Yeah, White Christmas, as if Billy Idol was doing White Wedding.
Yeah.
I'm dreaming of a White Christmas. No.
It's incredible. More people need to hear it. You know, I've been promoting it like crazy on all my websites and everything. And it's you know, I mean, I'd love it. It should be a standard, you know, every Christmas. I mean, you got Pink Floyd, the Us and Them song, which is Silent Night, right?
Right, yeah.
And of course, you got a Boston tune that's
yes.
God Ye Merry Gentlemen, and where is it? The First Noel. Well, one of them are...
Well, both. It's a medley.
Okay.
So it starts off with the riff that sounds similar, not exactly, but similar...
Right.
...to the guitar riff in... I'm sorry, to the organ riff in Foreplay. But then instead of doing that, we said, God rest ye merry gentlemen, you know. And then it breaks into the chords that sound like Peace of Mind, and that's where we do the first Noel.
I think it's brilliant, man. And then you got the Night Before Christmas and Led Zeppelin style. I mean, come on.
Yeah. You know, so it's like Stairway to Heaven and Cashmere.
Incredible. Incredible. You got many albums there. You got Sounds Like Christmas, Rattle and Humbug, DP3, Classic Rock Christmas, and the last one was St. Nick's Picks, right, in 2017?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Are you guys going to do more?
I hope. So, yeah, Robert's talking about that again for this year, November, December.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm definitely hoping we do some more of that.
Oh, it's incredible. You know, like I said, it should be a standard every Christmas. I don't see why not, you know?
Yeah, I hope some radio station picks up on it to make it, you know, that, as you say, that holiday standard. Like, well, you got to play this every Christmas season because it's just so fun, you know?
Well, I'm going to get BBS Radio to do it this Christmas for sure. I'm going to get them to play all the tunes on the air.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Gary, here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
You know, people have asked me that before.
Yeah?
And I don't really have a good answer. It's like, wow, I mean, I just have so many heroes. I mean, certainly growing up, I just think of the guitar heroes I have, you know, again, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck,
yeah.
Eric Clapton, Hendrix, you know, the list goes on and on. So, but, and then, you know, of course, being a big fan of the Beatles growing up, it's like, wow, it'd be great to play with them. But no, I mean, they are their own band. They sound the way they do. So my dream has come true to be in the bands that I've been in, like to make a difference in the sound of Sammy Hagar's band and now Boston, you know. So that's, my dream has come true.
Yeah, yeah. Have you met Hendrix or Clapton?
No, I did not meet either one of them. I did see Jimmy play back in the day, back in San Francisco. And again, what can you say? I mean, he was just fantastic. So I'm glad I saw him. My wife was a fan. We met in high school, I should say that right off the bat.
Oh, wow.
We've known her a long time. And she saw the Beatles like three times.
Really?
Yeah. And because she was always a fan, and saw the Stones when they came through their first time through the U.S. And
how cool is that?
A music fan, too.
Does she still have the ticket stubs?
No.
What year did she see the Beatles?
She saw, I'm trying to think what tour it was, but she also was there at their last show. So what was that? Was that 64 or 65?
I think 66.
Yeah, whatever it was, where they did Candlestick Park was their
Candlestick
last
Park, right.
Show.
Yeah.
She was there.
Huh.
And then, but did, when they played the Cow Palace in San Francisco, she saw both of those shows that they did there. And she talks about how she was in the audience with all the other screaming girls, you know, and that they kind of rushed the stage. Like, she was just, you know, part of the audience, but was getting squished, like, into the stage because, you know, all the girls behind were pushing, you know. And, of course, the medics were pulling them out and taking them away on stretchers and all this. And she remembers Paul looking down and, get that girl out of here. She's like fainted, you know. Just trying to help out. It's crazy.
I don't see how they played, you know. They said after a while it was just like mimicking, you know, because they couldn't hear themselves.
Right. But then you listen to some of those recordings of, again, Candlestick Park.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Shea Stadium and all that. And, you know, the girls are just screaming their heads off. But the recordings are like, wow, they're actually doing well. They're singing on tune and playing together. And, you know, yeah, they were a good band.
They were a good band, yep. So how long have you been married then?
43 years.
Congratulations.
Well, thanks.
That's awesome.
As I say, we met in high school and we got married 10 years after that.
Good
and so that was the advice we gave our kids. You know, it's like, hey, well, you should know your future spouse at least 10 years before you get married.
Is that what you tell them?
Oh, yeah, right.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm going on, I'm about 36 years myself.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Yeah. What about grandkids?
None yet here. Our first son got married about 3 years ago.
Yep.
And he lives here in the Boston area. Our younger son is getting married actually in October, and he lives down in the New York area. And actually, he's just about to join the Navy.
Really?
As a JAG lawyer.
Wow.
You probably saw that show too much. And
said, yeah, I did.
So I want to do. I want to be a JAG lawyer.
Huh.
So we're real proud of him.
Is that from the movie You Can't Handle the Truth?
Exactly.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
Jack Nicholson, yeah.
You can't handle the truth.
So he's going to be Tom Cruise.
Right, yeah.
That's pretty neat, man.
Yeah, yeah. So again, we're very proud of him too.
Well, your life is going to change when you have grandkids. I got four of them, man, and we are hooked. You know, we're babysitting,
and that's part of the reason we don't want to move away from
exactly.
here, because our kids are here, you know, in the Northeast, and because we said, oh, it'd be nice to move back to California, you know, because the weather is better or whatever, you know, or Florida or someplace else. But those darn kids are here.
That's
so
right.
If they have children, we have grandchildren, we certainly want to be around them. So,
yeah.
We can't leave.
Yeah, I'm very lucky my kids are here. They're all here. So we get to be with them a lot, which is really important.
Yes, yeah. Again, I envy you for that. I hope it works out for us because, you know, we never know. You know, I mean, kids move away. I was living in California, and my parents don't live there, but I got the call to join Boston, and, you know, boing, we're gone, you know?
So. Yeah. What, were you a hockey fan? Are you disappointed the Bruins lost?
You know, I hate to say I'm not a huge sports fan, you know. I shouldn't even be saying this because Boston, I mean, gosh.
I know.
You know, when I moved here, 85, whatever, the Celtics had just won the NBA. The Patriots were in the Super Bowl. And, of course, the Red Sox always did well. They were always, you know, but, you know, hadn't won the World Series again yet. And then, the NHL, the Bruins were always, you know, winning stuff, too. So, a big sports town here.
I used to have electronic stores, retail electronics. You know, like when the Walkman first came out, I had it. First Nintendo games. We go way back to the late 60s. My dad started electronics. So we had a store at the J.W. Marriott Hotel in D.C., and all the sports teams used to stay there, and the Celtics stayed there. Larry Bird would walk in, Danny Ainge, all those guys. So it was pretty cool. We had the Cowboys walking in. And, it was pretty cool. Very, very cool.
That's great.
Yeah. Gary, you have anything else you'd like to talk about or anything we missed?
I'm surprised you dug up December People. I would have mentioned that, but thank you so much for mentioning that, yeah.
No, December People is high on my list, man. I'm telling you. I don't get it. I more people need to find out about it. It needs to be a regular every Christmas. I'm going to tell BBS Radio, we're going to be playing it every Christmas. I promise you that.
Again, great. It's all for a good cause there, so we sure appreciate that.
And it's done well, you know. I mean, I hate to say this, but there are a lot of Christmas songs I just can't stand, and one of them is Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, yeah. Santa Claus is coming.
I can't. There's no effort in that. And Paul McCartney does not do a good job either, you know? And you guys nailed it, man. You guys nailed it.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, we definitely rock out on that stuff, yeah.
It's incredible. Gary, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today, for all the incredible music you've given us. We look forward to another Boston tour, an Alliance tour, hopefully soon. Please come to Florida. That's all I got to say about that.
Yes, with Boston, we often start in Florida.
Yeah, that's right.
I hope we do a tour in 2020, although there's no official word that we are or not, you know. But, if we get down there, please come down the show so I can shake your hand and meet you in person.
Oh, definitely. I think you guys played Ruth Eckerd Hall last time in Clearwater. I think that was the last.
Is that close to where you are?
Yes, it is. I'm probably about 40 minutes away south from there.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, I cover a lot of shows over there, so, yeah, I'll definitely be there.
Good, yeah. Love to meet you in person.
All right, Gary, all the best to you, man, and thank you again for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Ray. Hope to see you soon.
Me too, man. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Purchase a brand new album from Alliance entitled Fire and Grace at Amazon.com. For more information about Gary Peel, visit the link to Alliance is www.robertberry.com/alliance.com. A link to Boston's website, of course, www.bandboston.com. And for the new album, Fire and Grace will be available and should be available on Amazon.com right now. Very special thanks to John Lapin Enterprises for arranging this interview with Gary Peel, and of course the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends at gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of a Neglected American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.